Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. There is, in short, a lot to be concerned about in the space of protecting the country we love. It's always illuminating, often deeply troubling, but vitally important to take stock of as much of it as we can, in the shortness of time we have available, with one of our duty experts on all of these things. His name is Sam Faddis, Charles Sam Faddis, a man who served his country in a number of capacities, notably as an undercover operative of the Central Intelligence Agency for about 20 years, concluding that service, by the way, as a man responsible for worrying about, at the Central Intelligence Agency headquarters, weapons of mass destruction terrorism, as it was called at the time. Sam Faddis is the author, among other things, of Beyond Repair, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. We need an update on that, the decline and fall of the FBI as well. Sam, would you mind? We're going to talk with the guy who is the driving force behind a wonderful online resource and magazine, .com, also a member of our Committee on the Present Danger China and a frequent contributor to its programs, including the webinar we did last week on the bio lab in California. And Sam, we've talked a little bit about this, but I wanted to put it into a broader context with you today. Talk a little bit about the recent testimony of the FBI director, I believe before the United States Senate, and how it seems to be out of sync with what he and his agency are actually doing.
Yeah, it is startling, isn't it? I mean, even in this age where every morning you wake up and you read something and you think, good Lord, that's impossible. You got the director of the FBI saying, and I'm paraphrasing, but with this import, we're at a completely unprecedented level of terrorist threat. And in fact, one of the senators, I guess, was asking him, made direct reference to pre-9/11 and this, all the lights are blinking red, there's all these threats, and yet we did nothing to stop 9/11. And Ray was drawing exactly that parallel. He didn't push back. He made clear that, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Every indicator we have says we're about to suffer something catastrophic, maybe more than one attack. And so, I mean, I interpret that as, being the cynical guy I am, the FBI director setting the stage with those remarks, saying, when it happens, don't come back and tell me I didn't warn you. Like, nobody's going to do anything to stop this, and it is going to happen, and I'm getting my insurance policy in order in advance. But it is startling.
Sam, if I can interrupt you, he's the guy who is supposed to be at the front line of what we do to prevent something like that taking place. Are you saying that he's telling us there's this problem and the alarms are going off and so on, but he's not doing anything about it?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, that, you know, for whatever combination of reasons, presumably because, well, I don't know to what extent he wants to, but even if he wanted to, he's being prevented from doing so. I mean, we would start with job one would be close the border, right? Stop millions of people from wandering in and we have no idea who they are. That's apparently not going to happen. It's that juxtaposition that's just so jarring, right? Yeah, unprecedented level of terrorist threat, and yet all of our defenses are down. Our border no longer exists. We're not doing anything to protect ourselves. We're just sitting there waiting for it to happen.
You know, Sam, I just have to say, and this is a rare exception, when I want to quibble on your choice of words, you usually are extremely accurate in what you say, and it's usually very, very troubling. But the truth of the matter is, as you know, we do have some idea who these people are. Some of these are people who, you know, trained observers on the ground, watching them coming through the border, are military-aged, unaccompanied, fit, young men, yes, moving along, it seems, in groups, wearing more or less identical outfits and backpacks and so on, with a certain characteristic. They're Chinese nationals. And some have even got the tattoos of special forces units in the Chinese, whatever they call them, tiger teams. Sam, and then there's the jihadis. We actually had one of the senior Democrats in the United States Senate saying, hey, this is really a good thing. We've got lots of capable people who are coming into our country, and they can go right into the United States military and fill those yawning, you know, deficiencies in our recruitment, and get fast-tracked for citizenship. I mean, if he doesn't know who some of these people are, it's malfeasance of the first order. And so just a point of clarification about this. Am I wrong that we do know or have reason to believe what these people are?
You're 100% correct. And then we could move on to all sorts of other categories, right? We've got millions of Venezuelans wandering here at a time when, I mean, Venezuela is a hostile communist state in league with the communist Chinese, in league with Hezbollah. We know they provide false identity packages of false identity documents to Hezbollah operatives.
And Iranians, IRGC. So we may actually not have a lot of Venezuelans here. We have a lot of Venezuelans and Iranians masquerading as Venezuelans.
Right? You know, we got a bunch of guys carrying documents the Venezuelans gave them. That's right. All you know.
Bing. And those are the people, again, that we know something about, even if it's a false story, this business you're very familiar with. So, Sam, just to tie this in with this webinar that we did at the Committee on the Present Danger China's site, presentdangerchina.org, folks, we've talked about it a couple of times since, but I just have to say, Sam, it's worth repeating how, at least my takeaway from it, and seemingly yours and the other experts we had, was just incredulity at what the FBI and, by the way, the Centers for Disease Control were not doing about the lab that we had discovered in Reedley, California. I mean, you've expressed concern that we are essentially out of the counterintelligence business. This would be, you know, state's evidence A, if that, would it not?
Yeah, and you know, the biowarfare thing I find very troubling. When I was doing WMD work, which I did in Counterterrorism Center, but I ended up in that job because I'd been doing WMD work for years in the field. Number one threat, I mean, we worry about nuclear, radiological, chemical. Okay, the number one thing you worry about from a terrorism perspective, unconventional warfare perspective, is biowarfare, because it's cheap. It's easy. You don't need a lot of stuff if competent lab techs can do it. And what you unleash is a lot worse than COVID or the flu, right? You know, I mean, things like the plague and smallpox. The plague killed what? Ebola. I mean, you're talking about diseases that will easily kill one third of your population. So we're talking what? In excess of 100 million dead in the United States. You find a lab that could very well be part of such an effort.
And has some of that stuff in it, no less. I mean, it's not just that it could be.
You got a freezer with a piece of tape on it that says Ebola, and it's filled with packages. And as you've noted, nobody even bothers to open a single one of those packages and test it.
Right. Because they didn't say Ebola on them, right?
They didn't say Ebola, and the enemy's required to label their packages Ebola. So you...
Along with a safety warning, no less.
I'm sure there's a Geneva Convention provision that says that. So
yeah, probably.
You not only don't care about that lab, but you have no idea if that's one of or one of 50 such labs, and you're not looking for it.
And you're not looking for it. Sam, hold the thought. We have to come right back with more with Sam Faddis, our duty expert on so many horribles. We're always appreciative for his visits, but especially at a time such as this, folks. So stay tuned for more with the great Sam Faddis right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. When you're in the middle of history being made, it is often hard to recognize even major tectonic shifts. For example, after the fact, it was easy to see that in the run-up to World War II, the provocative weakness of the Western powers emboldened totalitarians across the globe. The same is happening today, yet we're mostly oblivious to the howling winds of war. Specifically, policies pursued by the three Obama-Biden administrations, characterized by appeasement, treachery, and the hollowing out of our military, are once more inviting aggression. The Chinese Communist Party's dictator Xi Jinping is literally setting the world afire from Eastern Europe to the Middle East, to Latin America, and probably soon here, as he shapes the strategic battlefield for his own impending aggression. Will history record that we failed again to recognize the threat and act in time? This is Frank Affney.
We're back. Charles Sam Faddis is in the house, the proprietor of AndMagazine.com at Substack. Required reading. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to know what he'd... Not only knows, but what he's telling us about, because too few others are doing that, especially in official positions like that of, Christopher Wray, the FBI director. Speaking of WMD, weapons of mass destruction, that you used to worry about in the field, among other places, Sam, is a report you had at AND Magazine the other day about Al-Qaeda's current ambitions, long-standing, I guess, but particularly what they're doing at the moment. Bridge us in.
Well, what people should understand as a backdrop is that in 2001, when we went into Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden personally was well down the road to with contact with Pakistani nuclear scientists for the purpose of having them either get him a bomb or construct him an atomic bomb. That was not speculative. We had to take that apart and prevent him from doing that. So,
just so I'm clear, this is the guy who found safe haven in Pakistan after he fled Afghanistan, right?
Yeah, and the folks he was talking to, for instance, Sultan Bashir, was the former head of the Pakistani nuclear energy program. So he wasn't talking to a couple of guys on the loading dock. He was to the point where they were drawing in sketches of the device. So we now have reporting, I think the Independent out of the UK kicked this up first, at AND Magazine, we dug into it, independently confirmed it, and added significant detail to it. The governor of Nuristan in Afghanistan, so the Taliban governor, but he is actually a member of Al-Qaeda, show you how Al-Qaeda and Taliban have essentially become the same organism.
You mean Al-Qaeda's still in business in Afghanistan?
Despite, that's shocking because Joe promised us that that was not true.
Not going to happen, right? Not only in business, but they're running a province or...
Running multiple provinces. They're fully integrated into the Taliban government. The governor of Nuristan, who is a member of Al-Qaeda, had a meeting recently with folks we've only been able to identify as Arabs in Afghanistan. When they use that phrase, it means not Afghan, not Pakistani, from somewhere else in the Middle East.
Usually and Wahhabis, as I recall.
Absolutely. And they're discussing getting a hold of at least one Pakistani nuclear weapon. So the Pakistanis have roughly 200. Fully functional nuclear weapons is not aspirational. As you and I have talked about many times, in addition to the possibility of raiding a site and stealing it, which is entirely possible, there are a lot of sympathizers in the Pakistani military that might just hand one over. I made reference to Sultan Bashir, that was the guy drawing the diagram of how a nuclear weapon for bin Laden. Well, his son is actually a two-star general in the Pakistani army. To give you an idea of the extent, I mean, this guy that once thought Al-Qaeda should have a nuclear weapon, his kid is now a two-star in the Pakistani military.
That kind presumably of cool? With some responsibility or at least access to these
well,
weapons.
I mean, whatever access he has, he's just an example of something that you know, the Pakistani military is not somehow firmly on the other side.
In this right. Thing. Au contraire, the Pakistani folks brought us the Taliban, did they not?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, look, this is literally a ticking time bomb, it would seem. Sam, let me switch gears. The Venezuelans, of whom we were speaking so fondly a moment ago, not content with sending large numbers of, well, military personnel, presumably, right, and prisoners and Iranians into our country, seem to have gotten marching orders, as is taking place around the world a lot, it seems, these days, from Xi Jinping, when Nicolas Maduro, the dictator, was in Beijing. And when he came back, he started up a new line of work. Talk a little bit about what seems afoot now in the neighborhood.
Well, Venezuela declared two-thirds of the neighboring country of Guyana to be somehow magically disputed territory that they really own. They conducted a sham referendum. And shockingly, Maduro got the result he wanted, the Venezuelan people. Nobody seems to have actually...
95%.
Yeah, nobody... It's very strange because they apparently are stealth voters, because nobody seems to have seen them actually...
was actually voting.
voting or bothering to go to the polls, and yet 95% of the people in the country...
I hope they're not going to give the Republicans in Pennsylvania any ideas about just getting rid of even the motions of elections.
This will be the next thing. Stealth voting in Pennsylvania.
There you go.
But okay,
so much more efficient, Sam. Let's face it, right?
Why bother? I mean, let's just cut to the chase. Tell us what the result is. He didn't just have this sham referendum. Then there was sort of speculation that, okay, this is all show and nothing's going to happen. Well, sorry, because he's now officially declared all these offshore oil fields to be within the territory of Venezuela and authorized Venezuelan companies to go in and said officially nobody else should be there. So he is now moving forward very aggressively. I saw a video the other day coming out of Venezuela. They're cutting new roads through the jungle to the border with Guyana, obviously in preparation for being able to move troops into Guyana. So Venezuela's...
These are the kinds of things, Sam, I think that you would call in the business you used to be in a clue.
What is
coming down the pipe.
The man claimed all the offshore oil fields, told Venezuelan companies to move in, and is cutting roads to your border.
And mobilizing his military.
He mobilized his military some time ago, so...
Some time ago, but I think it was shortly after he got back from China.
Well, 100%. He went off and met with Xi. What strikes me is the similarity between what he's doing, which is just saying commercially, you sort of skipped we just took it. Well, you've seen that the Chinese now have, 150 fishing vessels anchored in the South China Sea in Filipino territory, the territorial waters of the Philippines, the same thing. They just declared it, and it's a fait accompli, and their boats are there.
Yeah. And then there's these oil platforms in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yep.
In international waters that the Chinese are operating and presumably could use for all kinds of malevolent purposes against ours in our own waters. Sam, I guess the thing that just we're sort of chuckling about a lot of this, but it's laughing because otherwise you're going to cry.
Yes.
What is clearly afoot, and we talked about it in our webinar of the Committee on the Present Danger this week, and we're going to be doing it in more detail on this particular topic in next week's Monday at 11 o'clock. I'm calling it the bonfires of the tyrannies, mm-hmm, because clearly, as we've talked about, Xi Jinping is setting these fires. And this one in our own, I call it front yard, is going to be particularly taxing because of all of the ripple effects that it will create. Sam, do you have any sense? I'm told the Brazilians are also mobilizing. Do we know to what end? Is this a possible Hitler-Stalin division of Poland play, or are they likely to come to Guyana's defense? What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, I mean, I think that, as they used to say, is a $60,000 question. There's no question the Brazilians are ramped up. Are they ramped up because they're worried about the Venezuelans coming into their territory, or are they ramped up because they're getting ready to come in on Maduro's side? Unfortunately, given who's in charge in Brazil now, that's very much an open question.
And in connection with that, his own contacts with Xi Jinping.
Absolutely.
As well. The very close Marxist.
And in Brazil.
Sam, we'll be watching this space with your good help, I know. Check out Sam's writing on this subject as well at andmagazine.com at Substack. Very quickly, an impeachment proceeding against Joe Biden in the offing now in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, it appears so. And this is, of course, the missing piece in the dialogue we were just having, right? While all of this is happening and the world's on fire, the guy sitting in the Oval Office took somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million from Chinese intelligence.
And that's probably conservative.
That's conservative.
That's what we think we know. Yeah.
That's what we can document.
Again, the question just keeps recurring. What could possibly go wrong with having the commander-in-chief being what you have rightly called repeatedly a controlled asset of the Chinese Communist Party, especially at a time such as this? Sam, we have to let you go. Come back soon. God bless you, my friend. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and we're joined by Jonathan Emord, one of our favorite guests. He is an attorney by training, a constitutional authority, as well as an author of a terrific book entitled The Authoritarians, about how from the mid-19th century to the present, we have confronted a, well, toxic brew of totalitarians of various stripes, and the threat that they pose to a country like ours. Jonathan, it's always good to have you with us. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
I'm pleased to say that you have been focused like a laser on an issue that I think should be top of mind for all of us, whether we're specifically concerned about the strain of authoritarianism that I believe is best characterized as Sharia supremacism, or simply because of the strategic importance of the Middle East and its resources, and most especially our important ally there, the State of Israel. But talk a little bit about how you see at the moment, Jonathan, the struggle now underway between Israel on the one hand trying to complete its set mission of destroying the terrorist organization that attacked them on the 7th of October, on the one hand, and the growing pressure, both inside the region and inside the Biden administration, to stop Israel from completing that mission.
So in a sane world, the United States would recognize what is in its own best national interest. The United States would pursue policy that would enhance that interest. It would recognize true allies of the United States, and it would recognize true enemies. And in this instance, we have no question. Hamas is one of the most brutal terrorist organizations in the world, has held Palestinian people captive, have brutalized those people, and took it upon itself on October the 7th to engage in one of the most horrific, brutal, barbaric attacks in the history of the world against Israel. Now, a sane administration would have come out in full defense of Israel and would not be duplicitous in that regard, would be consistent in its approach. This administration has been duplicitous from the start and even before the start of this conflict. They have undermined Israel at every turn, and the emphasis now is on ending this conflict as soon as possible rather than enabling Israel to fulfill its mission of destroying Hamas, which is just as much a threat to the people of the United States, to Christians and Jews worldwide, as it is to the state of Israel. So it is in our against our interests without question to hobble or limit the ability of Israel to proceed. We should be out of the way and encouraging Israel to do whatever is necessary to completely obliterate Hamas from the face of the earth.
You know, out of the way is only part of what we need to be doing. Obviously, we need to also be continuing to assure that they have the military wherewithal to accomplish the mission. And this is, as you know, Jonathan, apparently the leverage that this duplicitous administration, and in a way, before the October 7th, it wasn't just being duplicitous in the sense of paying lip service to the importance of Israel as an ally, but it was actively subverting it at every turn. And I'm fond of pointing out, and I'd like your thoughts on this. When you look back, I know you've endorsed Donald Trump, among other things, in your role as a candidate for U.S. Senator from the Commonwealth of Virginia. But you look at what was the state of, well, the Middle East in general, but specifically the security posture of our friends and allies in Israel on January 21st, 2021, and what it is today.
Yeah.
And it's just stunning what this administration has done.
That's right. Under President Trump, we had the Abraham Accords. They were brilliant. We had a moment, an opportunity for peace in the Middle East, and it has been utterly crushed by the incompetence as well as the political bias of this administration, which is very clearly strongly pro-Hamas in all respects. I mean, through international organizations and coddling Hamas, coddling the Iranians, even in allowing our own troops to be assaulted and injured by proxies of Iran around the world. Presently, we're under assault overseas, and he's doing nothing definitively to establish United States strength and supremacy, which of course leads Iran to continuously expand its attacks on the United States. We are highly vulnerable, not because we don't have the wherewithal to defend ourselves, but because we have an administration that refuses to do so. Worse than that, it appeases and even financially aids the enemies of the United States. It shouldn't come as any surprise to us because the president himself is compromised and he has financially profited from the enemies of the United States due to a massive influence peddling scheme that James Comer has revealed. But we are in trouble, and we have got to get rid of this inconsistency and duplicity in the administration and have a strong, full-throated support as well as backed support for Israel in its efforts to eliminate our enemy too, Hamas.
Yeah. You know, I would add to the adjectives you've used to describe this outfit is duplicitous and hypocritical and incompetent and so on. Malfeasant is another aspect of this. I think there is a deliberate purpose here, and we certainly saw it in the run-up to October 7th. And now what is happening, I think, by the day is this increasingly overt sabotaging of Israel, which is, malfeasant, I'm putting it charitably, in the extreme.
And really, I mean, when you have, and we've seen this in other administrations, although not as bad as this, when the president of the United States is ambiguous, uncertain, incapable of articulating a clear foreign policy with a clear objectives for the administration, you have these coalitions that form within the administration their own power base and pursue their own agendas. And he's filled the administration with leftists, with people who are pro Hamas, people who are interested in destroying our own country. And yet he has the biochemical activity of a houseplant in his brain. And as a consequence, he gives no leadership. It's that absence of any clear comprehension and leadership by the president that invites this kind of abuse. And, you know, we saw members of his close administration leave when he said favorable things about Israel. He's been largely mute about that since then. And of course, the wolves have once again taken over the hen house, and he's very much like a wounded hen. They're running the show. Even if he did have competence in his brain, based on the time when he was capable of communicating and interacting, he was terrible then. No. Now it's just the case that...
strategically wrong again and again and again, as Robert Gates has pointed out. Let me just come back to this point about personnel inside the United States government. The last time you were on, I remember we talked about the Muslim Brotherhood on the Sunni side and the Iranian government and its, you know, operators, all of whom have, it seems, now gotten positions of influence and power to the point where their strong support for Hamas, their strong enmity towards Israel, is in fact shaping administration policy, and of course causing mayhem in the streets across this country and campuses and so on as well. Could you characterize from your point of view the magnitude of this danger as you see it at the moment, if such individuals, such influence operations, what have you, are not brought to an end?
Well, people need to understand that this is not a situation where there are just a few activists in the country. We are inundated with activists on behalf of Hamas, on behalf of Iran, not just on the college campuses, but in local, state, and national government. And this is a intended long-term plan to infiltrate and manipulate public power and public opinion to basically associate anyone who dares criticize the agenda of Hamas and of Iran, which is identical, to essentially create a theocratic dictatorship in the United States and to, along the way, completely destroy the alliances between the United States and Israel. This approach...
Kind of a problem for our Constitution, not least, yes, as well, right?
Yes, very much so. Yeah. This approach has succeeded for them magnificently. Everyone who dares stand on the other side against Hamas, against violence, against terrorism, is labeled an Islamophobe. And everybody who is with them is celebrated and encouraged. And as you point out, the administration has been cowed into a posture of being complicit now with their efforts to destroy our alliance with Israel and to basically make it impossible for Israel to get rid of Hamas.
That's, I think, exceedingly well put, as usual. I think I showed you a copy of this booklet that we published at the Center for Security Policy Press. It's available, by the way, as a PDF for free, folks, at securefreedom.org. It's called the Explanatory Memorandum, the Muslim Brotherhood's Secret Plan for America. And I want to talk to you a little bit more about it on the other side of this short break. We'll be right back with Jonathan Emord, the author of The Authoritarians, right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. When you're in the middle of history being made, it is often hard to recognize even major tectonic shifts. For example, after the fact, it was easy to see that in the run-up to World War II, the provocative weakness of the Western powers emboldened totalitarians across the globe. The same is happening today, yet we're mostly oblivious to the howling winds of war. Specifically, policies pursued by the three Obama-Biden administrations, characterized by appeasement, treachery, and the hollowing out of our military, are once more inviting aggression. The Chinese Communist Party's dictator Xi Jinping is literally setting the world afire from Eastern Europe to the Middle East, to Latin America, and probably soon here, as he shapes the strategic battlefield for his own impending aggression. Will history record that we failed again to recognize the threat and act in time? This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back, and another special welcome to our guest, Jonathan Emord, a constitutional scholar and attorney by training. He has been very vocal, even before he announced his candidacy for the United States Senate from the Commonwealth of Virginia, about various threats, foreign and domestic, to our country. And we always appreciate being able to take stock with him against the backdrop of his insights into The Authoritarians, the title of his very important new book. Jonathan, we were talking about the Muslim Brotherhood. I mentioned this publication. It's called The Explanatory Memorandum on the General Strategic Goal of the Group in North America. This is a secret plan that was found, interestingly enough, in a kind of safe house in Northern Virginia, right, along with what amounted to the archives of the Muslim Brotherhood that was very providentially discovered, as it happens. Jonathan, in this book, or this memorandum, I should say, the Muslim Brotherhood's number two guy at the time, a fellow by the name of Muhammad Akram, describes the goal of the group in America as being to destroy Western civilization from within.
Right.
Sabotaging its miserable house, namely the United States, by our hands and the hands of the believers, so that all other religions are subordinated to Allah's. And the point is that this is what they've been about. And as you say, they've been stealthily beavering away. They have several large mosque complexes in Northern Virginia, as it happens, among other places in the state and beyond. And I just, part of what I value so much about the clarity that you bring to these issues, Jonathan, is that you're willing to talk about these as threats and not, you know, shrink from it on the grounds that you'll be pilloried for being an Islamophobe or something else, as you said. Your thoughts?
Yeah, we have to be frank and honest with one another and recognize that this indeed is the intent of these people. It's expressed. They didn't hide it. It's in their memo that you're pointing out. And they're active in pursuing it. And unfortunately for us, they have very astutely aligned themselves with a whole host of others, not least of which is George Soros and his Open Society Foundation, which finances a lot of this, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Muslim Brotherhood activity in the United States against the United States, fulfilling his goal, which is to create a globalist authoritarian totalitarian regime where the United States' sense of nationalism, sense of independence, and actual independence is replaced by a globalist government in which the people of the United States will not even be recognizable, the borders having been opened with no restriction. And the Democrat Party is a lapdog in service of this agenda and joins right in condemning people as Islamophobic who merely describe the threat and seek government action to prevent it. It has absolutely nothing to do, per se, with their association with Islam. It actually is a perversion of Islam by most scholars' account when they engage in these acts of terrorism and when they try to create an authoritarian regime that disallows the other religions a chance to exist. This is, you know, yet another, we have a, to use their term, a rainbow coalition of radical groups that are now finding it possible to achieve their ends by aligning themselves with the most repulsive characters in the world. These are people who are murderers, who are drug traffickers, who are sex traffickers, who are interested in destroying our children, interested in destroying our economy, interested in destroying Republican government and replacing it with an authoritarian regime. Like all people of this ilk, as we learn from the Russian Revolution, in the end, they slit each other's throats. And in the end, it is a ruinous situation for the population, which is enslaved and impoverished. But it ends to tumult and to mass murder. The greatest number of human casualties in the history of the world as a result of government have by far been the product of communism, of totalitarianism. And if you're an American and you love your country, you have to rise up against this. You have to work with people like you and with organizations like yours to help fight against this menace. And you can't shy away from recognizing it. And you can't allow the government to do what it's doing, which is trying to hide you from the reality by trying to say that this is merely a expression of First Amendment opinion and both exercise of religion and opinion. Well, when you act against people to destroy their country, you are not speaking, you're acting, and you're acting in ways that cannot be tolerated by any sound, reasonable, sane people. And that's where we are today.
Well, as you were speaking, I just want to make sure we're clarifying that when you talk about rising up, we're not talking about violently doing so. We're talking about calling to account those who are enabling these folks. And I want to make clear that I believe that most Muslims in the United States don't want to live under Sharia any more than the rest of us do. They don't want to impose it on anybody else.
Right.
But unfortunately, the Brotherhood and its ilk, I believe, are, as is true of the authorities of Islam and certainly the Iranians, very much of the view that actually what was done on October 7th is absolutely consistent with the tenets of their faith, with the hadiths as well as the Quran and Sharia and so on. And interestingly enough, as you, I think, are aware, the head of the Muslim Brotherhood Front, it's actually was built to raise funds for and defend Hamas in the United States, the Council on American Islamic Relations, yeah, recently actually outed himself by saying he was, quote, happy, right, unquote, to witness the attacks of October 7th, and insists that while the Palestinians have a right to self-defense, the Israelis do not, and otherwise, apparently the White House has now decided that having been very much happy to do business with Nihad Awad, is his name, in the past, is now going to eschew him. But it's long overdue. And unfortunately, anybody with a lick of sense knew this is what was afoot. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more right after this. We're back for a final installment of our conversation with Jonathan Emord, an attorney and the author of The Authoritarians. And we were just talking about people that the Biden administration and I guess Democrats more generally have been making common cause with for quite some time, who are really problematic. And that would include, of course, both jihadis of various organizational affiliations, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Iranians, and others, but also the communists and Marxists operating inside our country, as well as those like China external to it. And Jonathan, you were raising concerns, as we were briefly off air just now, about how this is now being essentially inculcated, these attitudes, these sentiments, these associations inside, well, academic institutions that are inculcating in turn with our kids similar kinds of positive attitudes towards such entities and groups and their agendas. We had the spectacle of several of the most eminent universities' presidents being called before the Congress this week and comporting themselves rather appallingly. Talk a little bit about your take on that and what it should tell us more generally about what they're about.
Well, in the presence of rioting on college campuses across the country in favor of Hamas and against Jews. In fact, an anti-Semitic revolution, in effect, has been taking place on college campuses induced by Hamas, as well as liberal groups that are well-financed by Soros and others. These activities obviously invite action by the administration in those universities to protect Jews from harassment and abuse on the college campuses. Sad to say, they have stood down. And what they have done is not even invoke their own policies against harassment. They've instead characterized this as speech, even when kids are being terrorized out of their classrooms, chased and abused, physically abused, and put in positions of potential mortal peril in various parts of the country. So you have the president of MIT and you have the president of Harvard saying that even in the presence of a call for genocide against all Jews, which is what Hamas has called for on college campuses across the country, they will not act against those groups or those students responsible for these calls for genocide against Jews, because they say that's free speech. Well, when you advocate destruction of a people, you not only violate the Civil Rights Act, which justifies action by the university, but you also imperil, of course, these kids. It is an imminent call for violence, genocide, murder, and yet they're doing nothing. And why are they doing nothing? Precisely because of what we've been talking about, the effective infiltration of the university. And there are many Jewish professors and others who are not Jewish who fully understand and appreciate the horrors of ethnic cleansing and these sorts of attacks on populations based on race or gender or religion, who are standing up in the university context against this, many of whom are suffering terribly too, because they dare defend people against anti-Semitism. This is an outrage.
It is an outrage. And the concern is that the environment that they are now presiding over has become so toxic that it's physically unsafe, right, for those who stand up against them. You know, one of our friends and contributors is a professor who has been literally driven off campus himself over these deviations. He was actually a Marxist, no less, but he has simply been removed from his tenured position and made persona non grata on the New York University campus, for example. And that's only one example of what seems now to be a greater and greater problem with Jewish students, among others, but also those who are trying to advocate for traditional American and constitutional principles and values. And it's why I think it is so important, Jonathan, for people like you who have clarity on these matters to be in the public space as well as now in the arena. And I commend you for doing that. I did want to ask you about George Soros. One further question on that score. One of the things that he's been exceedingly skillful at doing is undermining the rule of law through people like secretaries of state whom he has funded for those positions, and prosecutors, district attorneys, and the like. How serious a problem do you regard those particular placements to be, among other things, for the American people's confidence that there is, in fact, equal justice under law?
Well, let's not mince words about this. George Soros has bribed the Democrat Party. I mean, the person I'm running against, Tim Kaine in Virginia, ever since he was mayor of Richmond, he's received money from George Soros. He received $50,000 when he ran for mayor of Richmond, one of the first people to receive money. But the point is, and he and Kaine introduced George Soros effectively to the entire Democrat Party when he was the head of the Democratic National Committee. And as vice presidential running mate to Hillary Clinton, he received some $100 million to the super PAC for Kaine and Clinton from Alex Soros. And Alex Soros has a post to this day on Instagram that has him right next to Tim and says, "I love this man," on his post.
$100 million. You can buy a lot of electoral malfeasance in that kind of money.
This is corruption.
We're out of time. It is indeed corruption. And it's one of those things that I believe accountability is not only needed, but long overdue. Thank you for helping to bring it. God bless you, my friend. Come back to us in the near future, if you would. We need updates on all of this. In the meantime, stay well. Thanks to the rest of you for joining us this time. I hope you come back next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.